Hi, you guys. This is Carolyn, the owner of Funky and Bold, and welcome to my podcast, How to Get a Man. This podcast is to tell you tips on how to get a man. And honestly, I can't make it any more direct than that. I made this podcast because I wanted to be the person I needed when I was younger. I grew up in a working class family. I am a daughter of a single mom. I grew up in a mid-sized town, Buffalo, New York. And we were, I guess, a working class neighborhood. Even though we were full of nurses and factory workers and police officers, teachers, we were indeed working class. And I grew up on 80s TV. So with those images, at that time, television was like a third parent, a babysitter, and we looked to TV to get an idea of what the future would look like for us. Because I grew up in an environment where the parents groomed their children to be better than them, to have more than them. So what I was growing up in was not going to be my future. So I would look to television to see what my future would be. And I was very much a sitcom girl. I was Who's the Boss, Growing Pains, of course, The Cosby Show, of course, A Different World, definitely molded my image of what adult life looked like. And in that adult life, it gave me an impression of what relationships would look like. Now, along with those TV shows, there were TV movies. And I did not get cable in my home until I was a teenager because my mom was not allowing me to watch HBO at 7, 8, 9, 10, like some of my classmates. So I got an idea of what romance and what sex would look like and how women were perceived as beautiful. So I'm talking about your movies like Top Gun, Dirty Dancing, all the Patrick Dempsey movies from the 80s, which was such fun. Loverboy, such fun. Can't Buy Me Love, loved it. Such fun to watch. But they did paint an image. Now, my personality, I am funny. I love to laugh. Loved to laugh when I was young. So I also got an image of humor and being a prankster. And those images were very much Eddie Murphy Raw, Ferris Bueller's Day Off, Weird Science, those type of movies. Those are the kind of shows that I watch. And because television was like a third parent, it indeed shaped my perspective of the world. Television was my best friend. I grew up as an only child, although I am not an only child. I grew up as an only child. So TV was my friend. It was another friend to me. So in that upbringing, I was encouraged to date. I was encouraged to find a husband, have children when the time came, because that was, in fact, a social norm. However, growing up in the 90s, what was taught was a big push to stay away from teen pregnancy. And then in the 90s, the late 80s, early 90s, what became part of the conversation was AIDS. HIV and AIDS and condoms. It took over the conversation. It went from a point where you couldn't even say prophylactics on television to it being, if you're going to fool around, I mean, they were really animate because first they really didn't have the education on the disease as how it was spread. And they were just 100% precautious. And they were like, okay, the condoms, you know, it seems like the condoms are really curbing things. So condoms was it. I mean, birth control pills, whatever, were also it. But you're talking condoms and abstinence. So it was really a time of fear. It was the complete opposite of the 60s and 70s when all everything was like coming about. So we grew up in a very conscious time, but it was scary because HIV was the gateway to death, because it turned into AIDS and there was no cure. There was no anything. There was no only prevention they had was condoms. And there was no hookup culture, not in my environment. If you were hooking up, you were rolling the dice. Because not only were you rolling the dice with your life, you were rolling the dice with your social reputation. I grew up in, as I mentioned, a mid-sized city, which was very much still a city. And the largest population at the time was teenagers. And the mindset of the time was, if you were having sex at 14, 15, 16, you were labeled as loose. And just to be plain, we called you a hoe. That's just pretty much how it was. There was no freedom of, well, you know, I'm attracted to him, I'll sleep with him. You would definitely get labeled. And then that would bring you down a few notches in social order. So, I mean, you did not associate with the best crowds. And that's just how it was. It just how, because no one really wanted to. I mean, they couldn't identify because they weren't doing it. At least that's what they were saying. And then if you did, it was really a catch 22 at that time. Because guys would talk you into having sex. And then the guy that seduced you would be the one to go off and ruin your reputation. This was the climate. This was the climate that I grew up in as a teenager. At this time, although I did have boyfriends and I had a lot of guy friends and, you know, a decent teenage life, I was not necessarily groomed to be a wife. Meaning I wasn't really taught how to go about finding a husband. And at that time, being a wife meant, you know, coming home, cooking, cleaning, taking care of kids, and taking care of your husband, and that was it. At least this is what I knew at the time. So I went on into my young adulthood, and finding a boyfriend was very hard for me because as an African-American woman, or a young woman at that time, I was college educated. I did not associate with many people who weren't. But unfortunately, that was the majority of the people left in Buffalo in regards to men. And the guys that were college educated, and if they pretty much left. They may have come home for a year or two, but for the most part, they left, or they found their wife or long-term girlfriend in college, and they were not an option. So it was slim pickings, but you know, I just hung in there and, you know, kept up the good fight, and it was looking up, looking around. Now, also at this time, I was considered overweight. And because I couldn't look like the images on television, the third parent in the house, because I didn't match those images that everybody saw, I did not hold value like a girl who did look like girls in the music videos. So I had to deal with that. And that climate was very challenging. It was very challenging because I had my mother telling me that I was beautiful, but I would go outside and experience something completely different because since I didn't look like the girls on television and guys didn't hold me in high a value and weren't really as attracted to me as they were, say, my thin friends, the unsavory guys would hit on me. The crackheads, the criminals, the drug dealers, the hit it and quit it types. They would assume my self-esteem was low because I was plus size, and they just assume I didn't have a boyfriend, and they would just come for me. And they would come for me any kind of way you wanted to talk to somebody. They didn't come for me like, you know, try to be my boyfriend, like be really nice about it. Some did, but it was really transparent. And then some just said whatever. They just said whatever. And because I was plus size and wasn't deemed worthy, they looked at me as a sex object, like an outlet to have sex, like, and then a discard to sleep with me, then throw me away. That's what their mission was. because I was plus size, because I was, and when I say plus size, I'm talking size 14, size 16, size 18. That's what was extremely plus size at the time. And I would get harassed. I would get harassed so badly that I had this green coat for the winter. And it was the biggest coat you had ever seen. It just swallowed up my whole body. Granted, that was the style at the time, but it was just like I could really like hide my body, and I really had to really toughen up. Like I had to carry myself like a tough girl in order to ward off all these unsavory men. And I mean men, grown ass men. And I'm a teenager or very, very young, 20. And I'm talking grown ass, my girlfriend's dad age men. So, these are all elements that I was dealing with when I was a teenage girl. Okay. So, of course, I have this ideal life that I want, but I'm dealing with all these obstacles and self-doubt and issues. My mom, I would tell my mom and she would, you know, explain things to me. But when you know your mom, you know your family, you know what they gonna say. You know what they gonna say. You know how they gonna respond to stuff. You could damn near quote it verbatim what they gonna say, how they gonna respond when you say something to them. So you like, you carry those messages with you, but like every situation don't fit those particular messages. And you know, when you make your way through it, you work your way through it. So I enter my 20s and I'm graduated from college, got my first corporate job. And I was so tired of dealing with rejection and arrogance from boys that I kind of just drifted on over to a more edgy crowd. And I really learned a lot. I really learned a lot from these people. I really learned a lot in those few years that I spent. And when I say edgy, I'm talking real drug dealers. And I'm talking real drug dealer girlfriends. And I'm talking girls who are real drug dealers. And I'm talking about con artists. Criminals, drive-by victims, kidnappers, they were my age, 16, 17. 18, 19, 20. They were doing all those things at those ages. But I met them when I was 21. So I come from this single parent Huxtable life to cross over into a world that I was bred to stay away from because of all the rejection that I got from the people of my community. When you tell someone that they aren't good enough long enough, they will eventually get tired. They will get tired of hearing that. People get tired of being rejected. They aren't going to keep knocking on your door if you're not going to open it. They get tired. And I got tired of that. Plus, they were boring as hell. They was boring as hell. Oh my God. Girls, they walk around like they wasn't physically attracted to the finest dude in high school in my face. But behind my back, they doing all kinds of things. I could tell y'all some stories on here, but I am not, because I will say the people who judged me were the biggest hoes. I'm not lying. And if they hear this podcast, they know I'm not lying. I didn't say your name, so if you come knocking on my door, that's an admission of guilt. But I'm going to keep it moving. But you get rejected enough, you get tired of hearing that. You get tired of hearing how you ain't good enough when you know good and damn well you just as good, if not better. So you get tired of hearing that, and I moved on. And they welcomed me with open arms. But see, what happened was, is that we had a ball. We had a ball. We had a blast. Oh, my God. We would go out. All those. Oh, I got memories for days about going out and meeting guys and just being free. But being in that environment did have its limitations also, right? Like, I did have a friend who tried to sabotage me graduating. From college. I did have someone that tried to sabotage me and get me fired from my first corporate job on the first day. So they were not everyone was really high achieving. But what attracted me was the strong female role models in the community, because I come from a strong female role model and I identified with that. And those were the people that I gravitated to the most. Them and people who were truly genuine and sincere in who they were as a person. Now, you know a phony person when you see one. I'm talking about a person who were who they were, and they did not apologize for it, and they just kept it moving, and you knew what it was when you saw them. You knew what they expect, and you just, you loved them just the same. And I enjoyed those people very, 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 very much. Very much. Very much. And from them, I learned how to speak my mind unapologetically. Sorry, guys. And I mean, don't church it up. Speak it how you speak. Say it. Say it plain. Say it matter of fact. Don't be all delicate. Don't pull no punches. Say exactly what you mean. Say it. Don't worry about it. And I would watch them say stuff. I'd be like, ooh. And they were not sorry, because you could say what you wanted. And you could still be respected for it. You know? And no subject was taboo. We don't talk. Oh my God, did she just say that? Oh my, there was none of that. There was none of that. You could say exactly what you wanted to say. They were very genuine people. And they had been through so much at such an early age. Some of these girls had apartments, full-blown apartments, functioning apartments with children at 19. If you'd have saw me at 19, oh my God, I was a mama's girl, still dressing like a tomboy, hanging out on the porch, couldn't cook for myself, didn't have a job, kind of doing my homework. It was crazy. But these were my friends, and they helped shape me, and God bless them for it. But, you know, our lives took us down different paths. You know, we all made our choices, and, you know, people get married, people leave town, people's interests, you know, grow apart, and we all just moved on, and you can't get mad at anybody for moving forward. So, during that time, though, I was never not looking for Mr. Right. I was never not looking for him. And I did find one. He was very handsome. Ooh, that boy was good looking. Very good looking. Very kind. Gentle. And I thought he was my boyfriend, and I was over there all the time, and I'm damn near tried to get a key, but we only dated like a few weeks. And I really didn't know. I was a couple of years older than him, and he had been on his own for a little while, and we were all starting out, and I, now looking back on it, I could see that I really was pushy and was making more out of the relationship than what it was. It's really just a fun relationship, and I had turned it into this big commitment thing. Because honestly, at the time, that's what you did. You met a guy, y'all exchanged phone numbers, y'all talked for a couple of weeks, and then y'all was together. That's how it went when I was in high school. There wasn't really dating around. I really didn't come from that background. So when he wasn't on board, I was so angry. And that too was a rejection. And then when you start getting rejected enough, you start to really internalize it. And you wonder, what the hell is wrong with me? You think it's you. You think it's you. You like, why can't I find anybody? You look around, you do see people in love, and you see people with some form of love. You see people with something, and you have nothing. And you're like, what's wrong with me? I'm a good girl. I'm good looking. I'm working on myself, you know. And by that time, I was working out, and I was really, you know, I had polished myself up. I let the tomboy look go. I was looking more like a lady. I was still very sweet, you know, and nothing. And then, you know, we broke up, and right on the heels of him, I had met my next boyfriend. By the time I had met him, I was so beat up from the rejection as a teenager, the rejections of boyfriends as a teenager, and college. No college sweetheart at all. Watching my friends get married, nothing for me. Watching people year after year, every summer there was a wedding, every summer. And I kept telling them, I'm not ready now, but I didn't even have any prospects. And It was a lot. I met my boyfriend at the time, and when we got together, I was so broken. My spirit was so broken. And I just knew he would like cheat on me, play some, because he was very good looking. I knew him. I actually knew him. I had met him when I was 15. A girlfriend from my high school had invited me to this party, and he was from a more upscale family. And I was invited to his house, and this house was very nice, and they had a refinished basement. That was a big deal. Refinished basement. And he was handsome, and his friends were handsome, and they were all healthy and fit, and they all had like these great extracurricular activities, and you know, they came from what I thought at the time wealth. And I was just like, wow, you know, I was like, I was impressed. I felt I didn't fit in, but I was definitely impressed. And tried my best. But when I met him, I told him, I was like, I know you. I met you at a party that was held at your house in your basement, you know, and I told him. And we ultimately started dating. And I was like, wow, here I am with this guy from this great background. I'm from a working class background. And he's smart, and you know, he was college educated. By that time, I had met so many guys who weren't college educated. I was like, I have nothing to offer him. he's smart. He's not gonna be impressed by anything I say. He does not need me. It's just gonna be, he's gonna get tired of me. He's going to get tired of me, and he's going to break up with me. I used to cry. Oh, my God. I used to cry at the beginning of that relationship. It was crazy. I would cry, and I would tell him, like, you can. I was like, look, I'm rough around the edges. You know, because, I mean, like, I was in the rap music. A lot of girls that from his background were in the R&B and just romantic. Imagined wife types, you know, they were just beautiful and they were just elegant and poised, and I'm hardcore rap hanging out with all kinds of sorted people and you know, a single mom, and he had two parents and all these things. I'm like, oh, I looked at all our differences. I was like, man, he's going to break up with me any day. He's just going to break up with me any day now. And it actually was really nice. It was nice. He was nice. We went on real dates. We went on real dates. He didn't want to, quote unquote, hang out, come to my house. We really went to the movies, went to eat. We did a lot of things regular couples did on a regular basis. And I really thought I had my husband. I really thought that I was at that age. I was at that age where, you know, people get married. I was 26 going on 27. But there was a lot, what I felt, a lot of unspoken pressure to get married. Because I was at the age where people tend to pair off and get married. And he was very mannerable, and I thought he was good looking. You know, it was like, this is it. This is it for me. This is my husband. But ultimately, the differences did play a part in our relationship. And we did break up. But what happened was, is that when I thought about the life that I had came from to the life I had had with him, I was not letting that go. I would tell him, you know, when I met you, I was like a stray dog caught in the rain with a broken leg with no hope in sight. And then you came, you took me in, and you mended my leg, and you gave me food, and you put me by the fire so I could warm up and dry off. Because honestly, before he and I met, I was moving out of town. I was moving away to a large city, and I was like, let fate have its way with me. Because I was done. I was done. I was done. I was done being rejected and treated like poo. I was done. And after being with him, and he was so good to me, I was, compared to where I came from, I was like, I'm not going back to that life, that sad life of going to the clubs with my girlfriends and not meeting guys, and or meeting guys and they were just trash, you know? And I just wasn't ready. I wasn't going back to that life. That was not an option. So I pressured him to stay together, and I did that for some time. Even though I knew it was a lie, even though I knew it wasn't a good fit, I didn't care. I was like, I was not going back to that life. I wasn't doing it. So we lived a lie. We lived a lie for a few years. And it was rough. It was rough because it was something I wanted and was willing to do whatever to have. So that really put the ball in his court. And we would be together for Christmas, and he would break up with me after his birthday. It was like clockwork for a couple of years. And it was just what it was. At that time, I was working for a tech company, a company that did tech support. And I thought I had my dream job and I was going to be there for the rest of my life because that's what you did. You got a job, you stayed there till you retired, you called it a day. And I thought I had my, because I liked it. You know, I was constantly learning around all kinds of interesting people and just great environment. But then there was a scandal among other major companies. And with us being a major company, the government start looking at the books. And they looked at our accounting methods. And it was not good. And once it made NPR, I was like, oh, it done hit the big time. And it was just a big snowball, and it was only a matter of time. And my company ultimately went bankrupt. And with my social life being what it was, and me watching my job dwindle away, I felt like I had nothing to lose. So I relocated. I relocated to another mid-sized town, Greensboro, North Carolina. And in Greensboro, North Carolina, I started over. with high hopes. And it was an adventure. I was ready to see what North Carolina had to offer because at that time, everyone painted this beautiful picture of North Carolina. You would have thought the streets was made out of vanilla ice cream and sunshine and rainbows was around every corner. I mean, they painted quite the picture in Buffalo, New York. So I went down. And it was okay. And it was a little rough, you know, the transition when I first got down there. But it was okay. I was doing okay. When I got down there, I had to get a job. And I had a couple of leads, but they didn't work out. So I went to a temp agency. I told them my background. They were like, yeah, we have a position with a company that does tech support for gas pumps. I was like, oh, that's different. Okay. Who thought about doing tech support for gas pumps? So I did it. And I got there. It was a little hard to catch on because it was just hard to catch on. Like these different scenarios. It was just different from what I was accustomed to learning. And it was just different. And it was a little rough. But when I got there, I met a guy. Oh my God. At first, I didn't think much of him. He was younger than me. He was, felt like a fast talker. Like a slickster. It's like this kid. You know, he just didn't think much of him. But when I got to know him, he was something. He was very interesting, completely different than what I was accustomed to. He had goals, but more importantly, he had ambition. Having a goal is one thing. Having the drive to get it and pursuing it actively was totally different. I had never seen that. I was around men who had a job. They went to work. They did their job. They came home. And that was that. They did not say, I want to be the head of this company one day. And in 6 months, they were the head. Never. I've never seen that in my life. And he had that. He had that. And I was blown away. And then suddenly, I realized, you know, he kind of good looking. He was damn good looking. He honestly was. He truly was good looking. He really was. It's just I wasn't looking at him like that, you know. I'm looking at him, you know, talk and stuff because, you know, the position he wasn't completely tech like I was. He was in a different division where, you know, you had to really persuade people. And I'm looking at him like, oh God, this dude. I'm thinking like used car salesman. That's what I'm thinking. Like, here we go. But, you know, it was just like, he really piqued my interest. And when he talked, he talked about, he was really polished. He had a very polished image. But when he talked, when I talked to him, he was like, listen, I had to take half of my stuff to the pawn shop so I could make rent. And then my mom had to float me some money. And then, I mean, he just started breaking it down to me about how he got by initially, you know? And then he told me about how he messed up a little bit in his position. He thought he was going to be a goner. He thought he was going to get fired. It was just like, he was really real. So it wasn't like, you know, he was this empty, no depth type dude. He really had some substance to him. I'm like, man, look, I gotta lock this dude down. I gotta lock this down. So I talked to my girlfriend. I was like, listen, I called my girlfriend back home. I was like, yo, look, listen, look, I done met this dude down here. And I described him. I told her everything that he was about. I was like, I have never met anybody like this. Never. And I was like, man, I got to lock him down. I don't know what to do. She was like, girl, you going to have to bring it. Meaning I was going to have to step my game up. What I did was I assessed the environment. I looked at my competition. There was none. They all just sat around waiting on him to make a move. And I was like, Okay. All right, I can do this. I'm good. Okay. Because I had to move quick. That's how I saw it. I was like, because even though that was what was popping in the office, a dude like this, he got access to women. So I got to compete with invisible types. You know what I'm saying? And it's really like, but I had to step my game up. So I had to be a better version of me. I wasn't going to go around and spy and see what kind of dress this chick had on and try to wear the same dress. No, I had to be a better version of Carolyn to get this guy. So I was like, all right. And I did my homework. This guy was college educated. He was a sports car driving fraternity brother, high achieving businessman. And he was 4 years younger than me. That was the real clinch. I was like, he is young as hell and he is getting it. I was blown away. I had never seen anything like that. I was like, this is about to be me. And I did my homework. I stepped my game up. I started doing my hair differently. I remained the same. I was my same genuine self. But what I did was I learned how men worked. And I learned what they needed to feel like better men and to feel worthy, and what they needed to thrive in their lives. Those were the things that I learned. So it wasn't all about, oh, wear this skirt with this blouse. It wasn't all about that. It was me studying every piece of information I could find on how men thought, how they moved through life, and who they were as people. And it was my first time doing that. And I started implementing my methods. And I'll be damned if they didn't work. They started to work. I was like, get out of here. Yo, this stuff works. It worked. But see what the deal was. This was my first time doing this. I had all that history from my past that I brought with me to this situation. So I was winning, but I wasn't winning big. But I was winning. And I promise you, that's what I focused on. I was like, it's a win. I'll take it. There were some key elements that were not in my favor, unfortunately. And I knew that if I had those things, that I feel he would have been my boyfriend. But honestly, what was going on that I didn't know was that he wasn't looking for a girlfriend. He was looking for a wife. I had no idea. The signs were there, but I did not know what those signs were. I had no idea. And then what felt out of nowhere, we had this fight. He had gotten his promotion that he had set out to get months prior. He made that happen. And then we had this fight over the phone. And it felt so fake because it was over something so petty. And I didn't understand. And he just blew up. And then he slammed the phone down. I was like, what? And that was honestly it, because he had gotten his promotion. We were no longer together in the office. And we had this fight, so we would no longer see each other socially. And it was not too long after that he had gotten married. So it all made sense. He was looking for a wife. He would get promoted. He would get married. He would take his new job and his new wife on into his new life. And I can't get mad at him for that. I'm not mad at him for that. But see, what the deal was, is that had I known what I was looking at the time, that would have been my husband. And those children that he had would have been my children. And the house that he built would have been my house. And that would have been my life. Do I have regrets? No. No. Because you know what? You got to start somewhere. You got to learn somehow. But the deal is that from that experience, I went on to be involved with some extraordinary men. Definitely some of the most handsome men. I have had some seriously powerful men interested in me. And I've been blessed. That experience was the gateway into an entirely new world for me. And I do not want anyone to miss their shot. I want to use every ounce of my experience to help you guys find and maintain the love that you deserve. Because we all deserve love. And everyone around us is not going to have the answer. And we all could use just a little more help. And that's why I am here. So I hope that you enjoy the stories that I bring forth to you. I hope you listen to me as often as possible. Tell all your friends. Go to funkybold.myshopify.com. Look around. Get familiar with what I have to offer. Go to Instagram, Funky and Bold on Instagram, and take a look at my information there. Definitely subscribe and DM me, and I look forward to speaking with you all. Until next time, take care.